You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. Look for the CUW logo in the sponsor section. How do we care for, how do we include, are we inclusive of those with disabilities in our congregations and congregational life and spiritual care? How do we overlook some individuals simply because they might have a disability or they might approach something in a way that's different than how we might approach it? We'll address some of those questions today. We'll talk with Mona Furstenau, Director of Lutheran Ministry Partnerships for Bethesda Lutheran Communities, and a frequent guest here on Faith and Family. Mona, welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me today. It's fun to be in the studio instead of via telephone.
Glad to have you here. And you're here in St. Louis because you're involved in an event here in St. Louis. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Glad that you had some time to come visit us here at KFUO Studios. Tell me a little bit about Bethesda Lutheran Communities and your specific work as Director of Lutheran Ministry Partnerships.
Well, thanks for the opportunity to share more about Bethesda's mission and ministry. We have been in existence for 114 years, headquartered in Watertown, Wisconsin, providing residential services, spiritual supports, and vocational skill supports for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We're in 14 states. We have nearly 2,500 people that we support across the country and staff that provide whatever level of care they need or support that they need in their programs, in their homes, in their vocational skill. I'm part of the Religious Life Department. We have 14 ministry consultants and four other directors, and my role is to share the mission and ministry of Bethesda nationally. I do a lot of speaking at conferences, preparing workshops and presenting and talking about how to be more inclusive, how to break down barriers in faith communities and in congregations around supporting people with disabilities. So I do that nationally. But I also still have my finger in that consulting piece that I started with at Bethesda. So when we get a request for information or support from a congregation in a state or an area where we do not have people we support in programs or we do not have religious life staff, then I go there and provide consultation and help them break down those barriers and become places of welcome and inclusion.
Why has this topic been important to you? Why did you get involved with Bethesda?
Oh, it's a long story. I'll give you the short version. I have a degree in speech and language pathology and worked in that field for 13 years. So I've always been interested in working with people with disabilities. Then I had my children, both very diverse learners on opposite ends of the spectrum of ability. And they've really been my best teachers and my biggest teachers. So I'm passionate about inclusion and about developing community for people with different abilities because that's been my experience. So my son is now 25, my daughter's 28. So I have a lot of experience in walking alongside, educating, equipping, sharing, casting vision, asking questions about how we might do this better. And I do believe that as a church, as a country, but as a church specifically, we can do better. And the church at large, not just the Lutheran church, but the church at large has marginalized people with disabilities or been paternalistic instead of seeing them as having value, dignity, affording them respect and a place in the family. So
your work with Bethesda and your own personal mission is to see that change, to be inclusive as a church of people with all different types of abilities.
And not just inclusive, but to share that idea that people with disabilities have value to offer, that we're all individually gifted, even and including people with disabilities, and that God can use all of those gifts to enrich the community in which people are interacting. And so that, I think, is my ultimate passion, is to broaden that perspective and that vision and that understanding that people with disabilities have something to bring, offer, contribute, and a meaningful participation is important to the rest of us, to all of us.
When did you start seeing that to be an issue? When did you realize in the congregation, in the life of the congregation, that perhaps we're not doing the best that we could when it comes to spiritual care or even expectations of people with disabilities and how we expect them to be a part of congregational life, how we expect them to share in responsibilities that we have in the church.
I think it's been unfolding for years that my personal family experience has been similar to many. It mirrors sort of the experience of many families with disabilities who are families of faith, who long for that place of belonging, who long for that place of sanctuary, but who've run into barriers or who've been hurt by attitudes or lack of willingness by their faith community to include, embrace, support, recognize, value. And I think it's just been a unfolding journey for me to recognize how broad that was, that it wasn't just my family's experience or my immediate friends and family's experience, but that broadly in this country and around the world, that marginalization of people with disabilities exists in every arena, and the church is no exception to that. Did I answer the question?
Yes. But I think we can dig deeper. I want to, as we were talking about people with different, all different types of abilities, that they have the value and they also have, they have vocations as well, that God uses them in the church as well. And I always think of John chapter 9 when this comes up. When as he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him."
Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories. And it's not, I like to add on to that story to say, it's not just because he was healed that God's glory was revealed. For those who are not healed of their physical disabilities, they still can bring that sense of awe and wonder and glory of God to a congregation. And can I share a little story about my son and that maybe
sure.
illustrate it?
Yeah.
So my son loves music. We're a very musical family. We are not athletic. And he is part of this family, so he's very musical. He loves music, and he is passionate about getting his whole body into it. So if you can imagine air guitars, air drums, conducting like a symphony conductor whenever there's music present. So as he was growing up, I got involved in the children's ministry music ministry at our congregation, and he was always right by my side. He's not able to sing, not able to play an instrument, but he loves music and he gets his whole body into it. So he was my apprentice conductor and grew up that way and was standing next to me conducting the children in their music. And his interest in music just continued. And as he got passionate and more knowledgeable about instruments, people would gift us with instruments. We now have 50 plus instruments in our house that people said, "Oh, I had the trombone from high school. We don't use it anymore. Would you want it for Ben?" And I said, "Sure." That collection of instruments has become now a resource for him. And he began to share in our preschool at our church, bringing an instrument for the kids to try and see and look at. We bring a recording of it being played well so they can hear what it really sounds like. That participation of him serving at our preschool in our church led to a connection with someone else in our congregation who works at the community college. And long story short, he now has a position. He's been there for 4 years, leading music experience classes with preschoolers at the community college campus, because that's his passion and that's his gifting. And I can't tell you how many times he's in church rocking out to the praise team, and the praise team and others are smiling and enjoying the music in a new way because of the way that he enjoys God's gift of music.
So he has multiple vocations, and he has ways in which to serve that are very fitting for the ways that he is gifted.
Exactly. And isn't that how we all should be participating in our faith communities, using our gifts? And
earlier you mentioned barriers. You know, so in congregation, sometimes we face barriers, and so that sometimes hinders us, discourages us from inviting someone to participate in a particular way, or perhaps even discourages us from asking someone to serve in a particular way because we think that their disability may prevent them from doing whatever it is we're asking them to do. Maybe they'll have to do it differently.
I think it's true that for most congregations and most people I talk with, it's not that they're unwilling. They just don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems so basic, and it is so basic to just say, just ask. Ask, what is it that you want to do? How is it that you want to be involved? What gifts do you bring? How do you want to share them? What supports do you need to do that? And let's just figure it out together. It's really very easy. But the barriers are often fear of the unknown, fear of saying the wrong thing or mm-hmm. insulting someone. And I think those are easily overcome by just being frank and honest. I don't know how to do this. I don't know what you need. Let's just talk about it. Because I recognize that you have gifts you can share and bring.
Tell me a little bit about the workshop that you're involved in this week here in St. Louis.
Oh, I'm so excited about this. So this is the annual conference of TASH, T-A-S-H. It's an advocacy organization. It's been in existence for about 41 years. Primarily started with advocacy in public schools around special education services. At that time when special ed was created through a public law and a mandate. And so they've done that kind of advocacy and moved from that into public policy work and then across the lifespan. And I think for a long time, churches and faith communities just really weren't on their radar in terms of a spot that advocacy might be needed. Some research in the last few years out of Vanderbilt University from Dr. Eric Carter, he's really the only one doing research around faith and people with disabilities, has really brought to light the difference between what parents and families want and what faith communities are actually providing, and that there needs to be education, equipping, and advocacy around access to faith communities and participation in faith communities. Bethesda is sponsoring that Faith and Inclusion Workshop along with a number of programs from the Catholic Archdiocese here in St. Louis. We'll be sharing individual workshops, five different ones, and then a panel discussion around equipping congregations, equipping Christian schools for inclusion of people with disabilities and support of their families. And so one of the main topics is dear to my heart and that I'm passionate about is about supporting the family. So the workshop that I'm presenting primarily by myself tomorrow is that the whole family matters when we're talking about faith communities and people with disabilities.
How so? Tell me a little bit more.
Each person in the family experiences that disability journey differently. No one chose it. And each part of the family is affected differently. So you have the person with a disability who has that disability and lives that. As a child, they may be unaware of what that means. As an adult, they may be more aware about what that means in terms of participation and barriers and difference and attitudes and so forth. The parents, we often talk about needing support, but they really experience it differently. And so the mothers often, and I am one, so I speak from experience, the mothers often feel guilt, feel overwhelmed, feel tired, tired of advocating and just simply tired, torn between other children they may have, finding time for the marriage. And so moms experience that whole process differently. Dads, on the other hand, and there's some stereotypes here, I get it, they want to fix it. They feel the need to be strong, and yet they're confused and unprepared for what being the parent or the father or the mother of a child with a disability means, or what that's going to look like. And let's be honest, there's grief. There's loss of that family dream. There's loss of that dream of who that child would have been, and that has to go through that whole grief cycle of loss and potentially anger, guilt, coming to accept. And for family with disability, that recycles over and over again every time there's a milestone missed. So when a child doesn't walk at the time of his age peers or talk or if ever talk or get a driver's license or go on a date or get married, every time those milestones of their age peers are being met, then that grief can be revisited because it's another loss and it's another difference of what the family dream was. And so we know that that mothers and fathers both process through that differently. And then there's the marriage that is affected by the stresses. It's not as bad as what we hear. There's numbers going around saying 90% of families with disabilities end in divorce. And that's not true. We know that's not true. We know that's a little bit higher than the typical general population. And we know that happens later in that marriage relationship. And we think that that has to do with the constant stress and lack of time and ability to engage and support the marriage. And this is a place I think the church can do better in supporting those families, keep those families together, strengthening those marriages, supporting those marriages and that situation. Then you have the siblings, right? In my family, I have a daughter, an older daughter, who is wonderful with all of the disability pieces, but quite honestly, there's a lot to her that's not about disability. And often what happens in a family is that the whole life, the whole family life revolves around disability. And that's not fair to the other siblings who don't have a disability. There can be anger, there can be overachievement, there can be manipulation, there can be guilt and shame and so on as well. And it could just, they could just get lost. They could get lost in that whole disability piece. And so they need different supports. And then you have grandparents and extended family. And for grandparents particularly, they're grieving for their child, the parent of the grandchild, and they're grieving for their grandchild. And that whole, they're worried, they're concerned, they want, they don't know what to do. And quite honestly, for most of them and their age peers, they didn't grow up around people with disabilities. They were marginalized and not visible. And so they have no experience either with what does this mean. So each member of the family has different issues and travels through that disability life with disability in a different way.
So then how do we involve the whole family of someone with a disability in the life of a congregation and in spiritual care? How do we care for them? How do we involve that? How do we as a congregation, how do we as church workers, how do we as other families care for them, for that whole family of someone with a disability?
I think first of all, it's that awareness. We have to acknowledge this is a different journey than what they had planned and from other families in the congregation. And also to recognize that disability doesn't define each of them entirely. It's a component of that family and a component of those people's lives, but it's not everything. So as we talked earlier about being individually gifted, we really need to pay attention to what are the individual giftings of each person in the family. Is the mom an avid quilter and does she just simply not have time to do it anymore? Then can we provide the respite for her to be involved in a shared interest activity with others of shared interest, something that has nothing to do with disability, to give her that break? Same for the dad. The child, the siblings who don't have a disability can be relieved of that as a piece of their life at the congregation. Can they be involved in activities of their interest with their age peers, not supporting or helping their sibling with a disability, but given permission not to in that arena, so that we're recognizing everyone's individual gifts and letting them use them and supporting them to use them, including the person with a disability, like my son, as I said, involved in music, giving them an opportunity to serve individually in their own right.
How can within the household, within the family, what are some things we can think about to support one another? As you said, we each deal with this or perceive this disability and are affected by it in different ways. How do we support each other? within the family?
I think it's really important to get some scriptural support to refer to and to include that in your family devotions, in your family time. And again, I'm going to keep going back to that. I think it's really important within the family to recognize who's gifted in what way and to let them serve in that way. So my daughter is a very verbal communicator, and my son was not. He's still not, that's not his strong suit, shall we say. And she was frustrated by that. And so she came up with and created a number of different kinds of picture symbol communication things when they were small to help in the her interaction with her brother. And I think she was gifted in being able to create those much more than I was. Mm-hmm. I was too close to it. And she wanted to do it. And so that role that she took on of creating some things to make it easier for her to communicate with her brother was a help to the whole family. And recognizing that and acknowledging that and thanking her for that and letting her participate in a way that she was able to identify using her strengths to help the whole family, I think that's a key thing. And then thanking each other for being with each other on this journey is something I think all families need to do more. Thank mm-hmm. each other for what they do in the family.
How can we as congregations, what are some, I guess, some misconceptions that we may fall into as congregations when it comes to individuals with disabilities and their families? What are some misconceptions that we might have about their involvement in congregational life, whether it be the family or the person with the disability?
Are you asking about families that are already involved in our congregations or those that are not?
Some that are marginally involved.
Marginally involved.
You know, that they know that they want to be connected to a church, but they're really just not. They might make it on Sundays, but it's not every Sunday. They're not really involved in anything else because no one's asked them.
Or the assumption mm-hmm. by the congregation is that it's not that important to them. But the truth of the reality is it's difficult to manage all those pieces. And on any given Sunday or week, as we're heading into making choices about what we're going to spend our energy on, if there's been a crisis at the school or a medical crisis or the sibling has had some issue or the breadwinner of the family, husband or wife, has had a work issue that takes energy away from them being able to manage that, getting to church where they want to be and know that they could get some support, they just simply don't have the energy. I think often for congregations, we project that they're not that interested instead of really trying to understand what that looks like for mm-hmm. them and where they need support to do more or be involved more. So I was just talking with someone here in the building who was talking about a family who has four children, two of whom have autism. And they take turns going to church and taking the other children to Sunday school and the other stays home with the children with autism. Because the congregation has recognized, hey, we never see them all together, and has begun to say and ask them, what can we do so that you can all be here? What do you need for those other children to be able to come and be part of Sunday school? What can we do? And my bottom line is always just ask the question. As a congregation, don't assume that you understand why. Ask the question. Is there something more we can do? Is there something more you would like? What kind of support do you need? And it may not be that you can provide it, but asking that question opens that door for those family to feel comfortable to say, this is what we need. This is what we'd like. We just don't know how to get there. And then journey together to the solutions.
And I would think, you know, average Joe in the congregation would think, well, that's not for me to ask. I mean, is that a fair assumption? We would all assume, okay, well, that's the pastor's job, or that's That's the Sunday school director's job, or that's,
or they're managing it just fine. They don't
right.
I don't need to get involved. Or if they wanted something, they would ask. Yeah, I think that's a typical attitude. But let me throw this out there. If you go to visit a congregation, who do you feel good about at the end of that visit? Is it the pastor who came up and talked to you because he knew you were a visitor, or is it others in the congregation who came up and said, hey, I don't know if I've seen you here before, I'm so-and-so, welcome? I mean, if we do that for any visitor, why not do that for that family?
Mm-hmm.
It's no different. People with disabilities have the same needs for belonging, same needs for care and concern, how you doing, what do you need, as anyone else. And I think we project that's different mm-hmm. when it's a person with a disability. And it's really not.
Hmm. We're glad you came here to receive God's good gifts with us in word and sacrament. We're so glad. We know it's important. Is there anything we can do that would help you do that more frequently?
Yeah.
Or
what works for your family? Mm-hmm. What doesn't work? Is there some way we can support you?
Hmm. What do you hope to gain from the workshop that you're involved in this week?
I always get encouraged by the room full of people that's there. Those are seeking to help the church do better, to help the schools do better. Those that are there to get more confidence or more resources to begin to do more in their home community, in their home congregation. I'm always encouraged by that. I was thrilled at LEA, the Lutheran Education Association convocation in Grand Rapids. Did two workshop sessions and had planned for 50. I had 147 people in one workshop. These are Lutheran educators saying, tell us more about how to talk with families. What do we do? How do we talk with parents? How do we support them? That's thrilling for me because that means each of the folks that are there have someone or some community or some place in mind that brought them there. And if they go home and do one thing, then that's a life that's going to be touched. And I get excited by that. So I get mm-hmm. encouraged by speaking to, whether it's one or two people or a big, huge crowd, I get excited by the potential that they will do when they go home.
I would imagine every congregation has a family that's affected by a disability in some way, but potentially could have more families that are connected to their congregation, that are a part of their congregation, that are that become an important part of the congregational life, receiving those good gifts of God on a regular basis, if they knew that there was that support there to help their family be there and be a part of that on a regular basis.
Absolutely. Some of Dr. Eric Carter's work was researching families and asked 500 families, what would you like to see in your faith community and what actually exists. And the gap between those percentages is huge. What he's done is create a practical guide for congregations. And what we know is that in the general population, the children at 21 and under, about 20% of them are affected by a developmental disability. If you look at the lifespan of people with disabilities, including aging, disabilities due to aging, we know that it's about 47% of the population is affected by a disability of some sort. We also know that those with disabilities are present in congregations at about 52% of those that say they'd like to be. And so there's huge mission field. Did that make sense? Did I say that in a way that's understandable?
Well, we are... Unfortunately, we're all out of time, but we can find out more about Bethesda Lutheran Communities online as well.
Absolutely. We have all kinds of resources available for congregations around disability awareness and equipping them to help their congregations become more inclusive.
Mona Furstenau, Director of Lutheran Ministry Partnerships for Bethesda Lutheran Communities. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.